Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, August 20th, 2018. With me today from the MacCast, I have Adam Christensen. How are you?
Hey, I'm good.
Good to have you here. Yeah, yeah. Happy Monday to you. Dave Hamilton, how's it going for you?
It goes great, actually. It's a good Monday so far. Busy, but, you know, that's better than the alternative, I always say.
I agree. So happy Monday to you. Hey, we have a couple sponsors today. We have LinkedIn Jobs and Molecule, which is pretty awesome. We'll get to them. But right now, I want to talk about Apple Watch. And specifically, there is a filing from the Eurasian, what is it, economic database? Is that what it is? Eurasian Economic Database. I totally had it. And this database lists new products. And, well, not just new products. It lists all kinds of products that are going to be sold throughout Europe. And the Apple has products that have shown up there consistently ahead of an official announcement. And the most recent is what looks like Apple Watch Series 4, because it is an Apple Watch. And since it's new model numbers, that seems like Series 4. Here's the interesting thing to me. I mean, other than the fact that it essentially confirms that we are getting very close to a new Apple Watch rollout, instead of having 8 models listed, there are only 6. And so the current Apple Watch Series 3, we have 8 models. So we have the 2 GPS only models, and then we have, so that sizes, and then we have the stainless steel, the aluminum, and ceramic with LTE, 2 sizes each. So you get 8 models from that.
Fair.
But this time only 6. So here's my speculation, and let me know what you guys think. The first one, which is, I think, the more likely scenario, Apple's dropping ceramic from the Apple Watch lineup this year. That would take 2 models out and leave us with 6. Alternately, they're dropping the models that do not include LTE. So that would be the GPS-only aluminum Apple Watch models. And 2 sizes there, so get rid of those. That leaves us with 6. But I'm thinking ceramic may be going away this year.
What if, and I'm just spitballing here, right? What if they're dropping the 2 of the aluminum models, right? So you get aluminum with GPS only, and then stainless and ceramic with LTE. If they can make the pricing on stainless work, that gets really interesting. But I think you're right. I think it's ceramic that goes.
But I like your idea. That's kind of interesting, too. But I'm still sticking with ceramic goes this year.
That's interesting. I immediately went to, when I first read or saw the headline for this story, my mind immediately went to, oh, they're just going to get rid of the non-LTE.
Oh, that's the third permutation of this. Oh, yeah. You may be right, Adam. That actually makes the most sense.
But that would be more models, right, Jeff? My math is probably off.
If we get rid of the non-LTE.
Yeah, the 2 GPS only. Yeah, then there's just 6 left.
Which was my second scenario.
Which is the second scenario. Yeah, and that was when I first read this, that was my immediate first thought. Just because then, you know, you don't have to, it has all the features, you just don't have to activate it, right? If you don't want LTE, you don't have to activate the LTE, but having the option for more people potentially means, especially for carriers, more business. And I think everybody I talk to who has an LTE one absolutely loves it and is willing to pay the extra value. Like they feel like they absolutely get the value out of the extra cost on their cellular bill.
Yeah, but those are people that most likely knowingly chose to buy the LTE model, because it's not just that you're paying for the $10 a month or whatever it works out to be with your carrier to add the watch to your cellular plan. You're also paying a premium to buy that radio that's in that watch.
Right.
So are people going to be like, again, it depends, just the like pricings, I was saying,
yeah,
if I they mean, can if, make the pricing work, then yeah. 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 Well, yeah.
And it simplifies. I mean, there's a huge cost savings potentially for Apple, right? In terms of manufacturing, and they can reduce the number of parts that they're ordering. Like, there's a supply chain benefit to Apple too, if they can make, if the economics of it works out for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I mean, but to be honest, I had kind of forgotten about the premium models when I first came to that thought. So, you know, I think logically it does make the most sense that, okay, look, we're just not doing the premium anymore. But that's an interesting thing, because, you know, you start out with the 10K watch and then you go to the $1,500 watch. And so it makes you wonder if the economics of smartwatches are in a place where people care more about the function than the sort of fashion premium side of it, which is or in the early days, something that Apple really tried to play up, right? This is a fashion item as much as it is a technology item.
Right. Yeah. And maybe if Apple were releasing new Apple Watch models less frequently, higher end premium watch would make more sense.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that actually for a minute, because the other side of this story is like, right, there's a new Apple Watch coming and we should be excited about that. I could not be less excited or worried about it, to be honest. I have a Series 2, and so it sort of plays into that a little bit, Jeff, is like, I don't know, do people really upgrade their Apple Watches? Like, I'm totally happy with my Series 2, and while I would like some of the features of the Series 3, I'd like the LTE, the autonomy, it's not enough to like push me to be like, oh yeah, new Apple Watch is coming out, I got to get that. And for me, that's a weird feeling, because most of the time when Apple has a new product coming out, I almost immediately want it. But Apple Watch has never been that for me. And I love my Apple Watch and I use it a lot. It's not even a use thing.
Yes, Sam, I'm the same way. And I have a Series 0 still. And I don't feel, I don't wear mine every day. I have other watches that I also enjoy wearing.
Right. Yeah, you're a watch guy.
I'm a watch guy. Yeah. But I wear my Apple Watch more frequently than any other watch. And there are times where I will wear it for 2 weeks straight. Right. And those times have happened recently. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like I'm missing anything. Of course, I haven't experienced that, which I'm missing. So, you know, that's one of those, it's an argument that could be made. I'm like, well, but right. Let me put it this way. It is exactly as functional to me. It's more functional to me today than it was the day it was released, because new features have been added to it over the years. Right. Yeah. So I don't feel like the watch, certainly. And I think I can speak for most of the people I've encountered. The watch is not one of those things that you upgrade just because a new one came out.
Yeah, most people don't. I wonder if that's a dilemma for Apple, and I wonder if they need to slow down this update cycle. You know, like, do we need a new one every year, every 18 months?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. And I have a Series 3, and the Series 4 could be very compelling for me, but honestly, what would make a Series 4 a compelling purchase for me today would be significant battery life improvement, because I do a lot of hiking and I have to make a lot of concessions with the way I use my technology hiking to be able to make my Apple Watch make it through a hike. And so a longer battery, that would be a compelling thing for me, or bigger battery, excuse me. So, yeah, unless Apple comes up with something that really blows me away, this year I may very well be skipping the Apple Watch. We'll have to see. Hey, we have a sponsor today. We actually have two. And our first one is LinkedIn Jobs. And here's the deal. If you are on the hunt for a new employee for your business, then you need to go someplace where you have a much higher likelihood of finding exactly the employee you want. and not have to spend a lot of time hiring people and then rehiring people and hoping it all just works out. So that places LinkedIn Jobs. And the reason being is because you already have the majority, I believe it's 70% of the workforce in the United States is on LinkedIn. And the people that look for jobs on LinkedIn tend to be better qualified for those positions than people that are applying through other job boards. So you have a much higher likelihood of finding the right person the right time or right away. And ultimately, that means you save money, which is great. So LinkedIn Jobs, they want you to save even more money on your job hunt, and they're giving you a $50 discount because you listen to Daily Observations. So here's the deal. Hurry to linkedin.com/TDO and get a $50 off your first job post. That's linkedin.com/TDO to get $50 off your first job post. linkedin.com/TDO. And terms and conditions apply. So thank you, LinkedIn Jobs, for being our sponsor. And our second sponsor today is Molecule. And if you're not familiar with them, well, you're going to want to be, because what they do is make air purifiers for your home that are technologically way beyond the air filters that people are using today. Because what they do, instead of renting air through these physical screens, they're doing this thing on the molecular level where they're actually breaking out the pollutants and the allergens and all of the other stuff that just makes your air crappy in your place. And they've done it in a way that not only does it work well, but it looks cool. And they have this breakthrough science that is actually destroying those pollutants for you. And they've had customers tell them that they were able to breathe through their nose for the first time in 15 years after getting a Molecule air purifier into their home. So they are offering a $75 discount on your first order. So here's what you need to do. You need to head over to molecule.com. That's molekule.com. And at checkout, you need to enter the promo code TDO. That's going to get you a $75 discount off your first order. So head over to their website, molecule.com, molekule.com. Get your Molecule air purifier, $75 off that first order. And considering how bad the smoke has been from forest fires around the United States, this is something that I'm thinking people really need to put in their homes. So thank you, Molecule, for being our sponsor today. Okay, so the second thing that I wanted to look at today is the whole thing with cloud storage servers, but putting them in your home. And this is something that we've talked about some in the past. But Dave, you've been using Synology to do this yourself. And I'm just curious what it is that makes this such a good thing, at least for some people, and why would people want to do this?
Well, the whole idea is, you know, the right way to think about this is private cloud, right? We are all aware of and most likely using at some level a public cloud server like Dropbox or iCloud Photo Library or iCloud Drive, right? Or Box.com. And, you know, there's lots of them, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're storing your stuff on someone else's server. Now, storing it on someone else's server often means you've got to pay, usually monthly or annually, for that storage space that you're using. And then, of course, there are the privacy concerns. Anytime you're storing your data somewhere, there's a risk. Now, the risks are different depending on who it is that's storing your data and how they treat things like that. In fact, the ones that I've mentioned are all actually pretty good about privacy, but it is still someone else's server. And then, like I said, there's the cost. So moving that cloud into your home can and or office can deal with the privacy stuff, because now it is 100% under your control, unless somebody breaks in and steals the box. And even then might still be under your control if you've encrypted your data with a key, right?
Right.
And then there's the price, right? Yes, you pay up front to buy one of these boxes, and Synology certainly makes some of them, but there's others. And then that's it, right? You know, whatever storage you have is yours, and you don't have to pay every month because there's no fee. You already bought it. It's yours. So Synology is the one that I have found works best for me. And I spent a number of years kind of hunting around. You know, Drobo makes two different product lines. They have their direct connected Drobos, and then they have their network attached Drobos, and the network attached ones would fall certainly into this private cloud realm. And they make some decent ones, but their feature set is limited. And very specifically, they don't have an option where you can get that Dropbox like functionality, where you get, you have the ability to just sync a folder's worth of files amongst all your machines. And so Synology does that for me. Synology also has something called Moments now that, is essentially like, I don't want to call it like iCloud photo library, but I will say that it's very similar to Google Photos or Amazon Photos, where as long as you launch the app on your iPhone, it automatically syncs all your photos up to your Synology private cloud. And it will do this whether you're at home or not.
Oh, okay.
Right. It's available anywhere. So it's really handy if you're, you know, on vacation or whatever, you just launch the app or tell it to launch in the background with geofencing or something. And then, all your photos are uploaded and it will scan through all your photos and identify faces and identify, you know, cats and butterflies and cars and all the other things that all these things identify. It does all that automatically. And then you can look at your photos, you know, by location or by date or by, you know, if you want to see all the photos that you took of cats, well, there you go. And it, you know, like that kind of thing is really cool. As you might imagine, these things come with different levels of complexity to get going.
I was about to ask, because yeah. I've been playing around with Raspberry Pi, and I'm partway through setting up my own cloud server built on a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
This is not for the faint of heart.
No. What you're describing is not for the faint of heart. Synology can be.
Make it a little bit easier, but I have to tell you, you still need a certain level of technical skill. And I have some experience with Surface. I'm jumping in because I've tried the Synology cloud thing as well. And I started down the path. I got pretty far in. I got it somewhat set up, but kind of gave up on it because it just got to be, I was really out of time. It wasn't the fact that I couldn't eventually figure it out. It was that, oh, I have to figure this out and I need more time and I'll get to this in another day. So I would agree. There's some amount of technical skill involved versus, you know, obviously signing up for some other service where some, you know, staff has already built this thing for you and you just use it. Right.
Yeah, where all you really need to do is make a login, and that's it.
Totally. Well,
and pay some money.
And pay some money regularly. Some money. Yeah. Right. And, you know, there are other options. I mean, we had one option that now is almost completely gone, which was the connected data transporter thing, which really, it would sync your photos. And I guess for some folks that was doing it, but really it was aimed at the, give us, you know, we will give you a place in your home to sync all your files. And it would do it remotely or at home. And they had a good feature set. Their software was always a little bit wonky, but setup was a breeze, right?
As far as I know, and, you know, hopefully I'm not over giving credit, but I think they sort of pioneered this home appliance segment. Like, they were one of the first ones that I knew that was like, yeah, this is a problem that home users, you know, there's a certain segment that wants solved. And it's proven, I think, now by the fact that there are a lot of alternatives, and I've wanted to start looking into some of these. And I know some people in my community have recommended Apollo, which is from Promise Systems. They have a little box, eight terabytes that you can get, and you just plug and play. And a lot of people seem to really also like Western Digital's MyCloud offering, which I've never personally used, but every time this topic comes up, those are recommended. But those came after the transporter. but they're very similar in terms of a plug and play kind of product.
Right. In terms of the concept, I was first introduced to it when Drobo came out with the FS, which is their first network, you know, consumer focused network offering. But they never really delivered on the promise of that. Certainly not back then. And
well,
now
that wasn't a sub. I mean, that wasn't a sub, you know, like $200-$300 plug-in appliance kind of thing. Right.
For with sure.
One point, you know, plug-in power. It's the Apple thing, right? Plug-in power, plug-in internet. You're sort of done.
And you're sort of done.
Ignoring the setup part. But
Yeah.
The problem. So Drobo introduced it, but you're right. Connected Data, which incidentally included a lot of the original management team from Drobo. So no great surprise. Really, you're right. They did, as far as public awareness, which includes my awareness, is concerned, they were the first to make this, as you said, appliance, right?
Kind of like a category.
Did it. Know? Yeah. And there are others, you know, but the client software is the thing where many of these really fall short for me. I've tested most of them. And, you know, there was one, I can't remember the name of it. It came out at CES this year, and I was really excited because it looked on the surface like it was, oh, that's like the Transporter. Cool. And, you know, Transporter had already basically announced that it was gone. And I tried it out, and it was like, the software was like really janky. And
the integration part is hard.
Yeah, it's really hard because you got to integrate with the Finder on the Mac, with, you know, Windows on the Windows
Linux,
side,
with iOS, with Android. And then,
And that's what keeps, that's what really impressed me about Synology when I first encountered them, you know, years ago. I was actually ranting about how I was upset that Drobo sort of introduced this concept with the FS and then didn't deliver. Like I said, since then they've gotten better, you know, and they're more focused on it now, but back then, no. And one of my listeners at Mac Geek Gab was like, you keep complaining, but I hear you, but have you looked at this Synology thing? And it was like, oh my God, where have you been all my life? You know, and their software for Mac OS and iOS, which is what matters most to me, works really, really well. And it feels like, you know, it, like on the Mac, it works just like the Dropbox client for that stuff. It just, like, I don't have to think about it and I can trust it implicitly. And that's huge. And on iOS, of course, it works with, you know, the whole files infrastructure and my stuff just appears in the files app and all that. So that's what keeps me coming back to Synology is their software has been the best. Their client software has been the best for Apple stuff that I've tried.
All right. Well, I'm going to keep plugging along with my Raspberry Pi project just because it's kind of fun. So I'll let you know how that works out. I'm at the point. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to ask if we have time for one hopefully really quick wrap-up question that I'm curious about with all of this too. So, I mean, security is something that I worry about with people setting up their own private clouds. And I know like things like Synology and these things, they have the ability to, you know, set up fairly easily, I think, encryption of the data actually on the drive. But where I get more concerned is people opening up ports and needing to, you know, like open up their networks a little bit. Is there concerns there, Dave?
So, Synology has their, you set up a Synology ID and you can, if you want, poke holes in your network and open all those ports and everything. Or you essentially are routed. Not the data doesn't go through Synology servers, but Synology servers deal with the handshake for you and then pass the connection off so that it is a direct connection without you having to open these ports and do all that stuff on your own.
So then is all the transfer
happening? I liked about Transporter.
Yeah,
it was the same kind of thing. That's right. Yep.
So is then all that transport happening over SSL? And then are you using their keys and things like that? Like, because that's the other part of this is like sometimes people get really bogged down in the technical of, oh, I got to get an SSL cert and how do I do that? Or is it helping you generate like private certs?
Yeah. In fact, you can use Synology certificate. They've got one that they distribute with every disk station so that you can get up and running without having to think about this. But adding a Let's Encrypt cert to it, which you can generate for yourself, is built into the disk station. So you never even have to like think about how do I use Acme tool to generate a Let's Encrypt, right? Like that doesn't
exactly.
happen.
Yeah. Oh,
it
cool.
just, you just do it right that's in great. The, in the web interface. Yep.
All right. That's cool. I've been taking notes as we go along. I have a lot of links to include in the show notes today, apparently.
yeah.
yeah.
And if you want this show to go about 2 hours, I'm here. So, you know, we can, just kidding.
It's, there was a, that brief second where I thought, yeah, let's do it. But no, we'll go ahead and wrap up now. Dave, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And Adam, thanks for joining us too.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me too.
Yeah, and thank you to LinkedIn Jobs for being our sponsor today. Head over to their website, linkedin.com/TDO, and get $50 off your first job posting. And also thank you to Molecule for being our sponsor today. Head over to their website, molecule.com, M-O-L-E-K-U-L-E.com, and use the code TDO at discount or at checkout, wow, to get $75 off your first order. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.